From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. Giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest, we have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, not to mention space mammies. So keep it tuned right here. This hour, very pleased to present to you folks a name that is not unfamiliar to most, but we've got to talk about a character, a historical figure who certainly was some kind of character out of these mountains. And the fellow I brought in to discuss those matters, Mr. John Elliston, how are you, sir?
Good evening. I'm great, Vance. Thanks for having me here tonight.
Thanks for coming on Speaking of Strange. It's a long time coming. Of course, it's been a couple years now since you came over and did riffing, and you and I like to do just that, talk about rock and roll bands. You were down in Chapel Hill and got to see firsthand some of my favorite music happening.
Yeah, and you're sharing some tonight, I believe.
Yeah, we'll hear some custom bumpers curated for Mr. Elliston's appearance here on Speaking of Strange. I'll start with a news item to kind of tee us off, not tick us off, but to get us teed up, I guess I should say, for our conversation this hour. And the headline reads, Richard Linklater, Robert Downey Jr. team up for real-life con man movie. Downey will also produce under his Team Downey banner along with Annapurna's Megan Ellison. Richard Linklater will direct Robert Downey Jr. in a real-life con man story. Annapurna Pictures and Team Downey are partnering for the untitled feature, which is based on the episode Man of the People from Gimlet Media's Reply All podcast. The podcast tells the true story of two doctors, Dr. John Brinkley, who scammed his way to fame and fortune using fake medicine, populism, and radio, and Dr. Morris Fishbein, the editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association, who goes on a decade-long quest to take Brinkley down. Megan Ellison will produce for Annapurna, with Robert and Susan Downey both acting as producers under their Team Downey banner. So there you go. That's Hollywood news. Some of you people may follow that sort of stuff. But the thing there that brings it home is Dr. John Brinkley. If you know Dr. John Brinkley, you probably know him as Dr. Goat Gland Brinkley, because that's the notorious procedure that he is most infamous for. You may also know that he helped popularize commercial radio with XERA, the most powerful station on the planet, one of those Mexican border stations. And here recently, John Elliston put together an article for WNC Magazine, and I got to see him give a presentation at PAC Library just a couple weeks ago, before I knew about this Robert Downey Jr. movie, which, of course, we hope it's a good one. The subject matter is certainly engaging enough. You hear about Dr. John Brinkley around these parts occasionally. When did you first encounter the fella, and what struck you about his story?
Well, John Brinkley was famous the world over, and at one point in the early 1930s, probably the most famous North Carolinian, certainly the most famous Western North Carolinian. He hailed from Jackson County and came from very humble roots. A few years ago, I co-wrote an update of the book North Carolina Curiosities, where we summarized just what that sounds like, and we came across the story of Dr. Brinkley and his trajectory from poor mountain boy to world-famous medical maverick to ultimately disgraced con man, and found that his signature surgery, and there's no other way for me to say it than that it was affixing goat testicles to men's parts to increase their virility, a procedure that I highly recommend against. There's slim evidence that it ever worked and plenty of evidence that it went awry on many an occasion.
Don't try this at home.
Don't try that at home. Nevertheless, we learned about Brinkley, whose story is strangely little known today, but how he rose to great fame and wealth using quack treatments just like that.
It's interesting. I think one of the first locals I ever heard talk about him was Gary Carden. He's a storyteller and quite a character in his own right. Gary Carden says that he actually went to the train station in Silva when he was a young boy with his grandfather to see Dr. John Brinkley as he came through town, and he gave a speech, and, you know, like 300 people came out to the train station in Silva. Of course, that was close to where he grew up,
That's
so it
right.
was kind of like a homecoming. And he was already rather notorious at that time, and I think the hellhounds were on his his trail. But when Gary asked his grandfather, what does this man do? He said, he makes the dead bough bloom again. And so Gary, as a small boy, thought that he was an arborist, you know, a landscaper or something.
It's a tough thing to talk about in any era.
So he makes the dead bough bloom again.
Mm-hmm.
And upon further interrogation as to why is this guy important, Grandpa, why do you want to come out and see this man? His grandpa just said, well, he made something of himself.
He certainly did. He came from such a hard scrabble origins in a tiny community outside of Cullowhee and Silva in Jackson County. He was born from a powerhouse of a mountain folk doctor, also named John Brinkley, who served in the Confederate Medical Corps during the Civil War. The senior Brinkley was something of a storied man himself. He ultimately had four wives, survived the first three of them. They were all younger. And he had a pretty good reputation around the region, but he left his son John Brinkley on to chart a bigger fate. The John Brinkley we're talking about is the one who became famous, as we said, and the one who had an incredible knack for self-promotion, advertising, harnessing the power of the then-new commercial radio, and telling you what you wanted to hear so that you'd mail in your 10 or 15 bucks to get his medicines or his advice, or you'd pay top dollar to get those goat glands put in you.
Which meant a trip to his hospital. He actually opened up hospitals.
Yeah, he was
almost first the early Brinkley hospital photos I look more like a gas station, and you think, would you actually go in there to have any sort of procedure? I don't think I would let people test my blood pressure in that building.
He started very small, in part because he had to. Part of Brinkley's saga is that he never really firmed up his medical credentials. He would get honorary degrees, mail-order degrees, degrees from questionable institutions, and sort of parlay them against each other, along with his marketing genius. But he had to start in a tiny Midwestern town in Milford, Kansas, population 200 on a good day. And he wasn't doing much but sewing up barbed wire injuries until one day a farmer came in and said, Doc, I'm sexually weak. I got a flat tire down there. And they talked for a while and ultimately arrived at the goat gland solution. And from there, Brinkley's trajectory kind of took off.
And it never was safe, or it never was, it never even made a lot of sense.
It doesn't. And Brinkley was forced later, during one of the many lawsuits that he was involved in, to testify in court exactly what the procedure was. And he gave varying answers, none of which made even intuitive sense, unless you're sort of in a witch doctor kind of mode of thinking. You know, he wasn't. I'm almost loath to talk about the procedure itself. You go buy a biography about him, but it's pretty much as we've described it. And yet he was able to convince folks that it worked.
Yeah, in some cases, literally taking a goat testicle and putting it in there alongside
it,
putting it alongside yours.
Didn't connect it, just plopped it in there to rot, just hopefully not get infected.
I think it's safe to say just like a third nut.
And exactly what it was. And you got to understand, like, men being sexually anxious was not a new thing. It was predated by thousands of years, and we've got our Viagras and their equivalents today. But in the 20s and 30s, this was thought to be one of the real ways to get your virility back, at least under folks who fell for Brinkley's gambit.
Oh, my goodness. Of course, that is the most sensational medical procedure that Dr. John Brinkley pioneered. And, I mean, he was probably the only person to get away with that on any scale.
Well,
there imitators?
He had his acolytes, yeah. And at some point he became so controversial and he had to move from state to state as he lost his medical licenses. So he would have the surgery performed through his surrogates. So they would claim the Brinkley treatment as a brand, but he could distance himself a little bit legally and continue to profiteer off of it. And we should say, you know, he got his real medical start in Greenville, South Carolina, when in 1913 he went down there with a partner, and under synonyms they opened a medical practice where they administered what they called German electromedicine. These were injections and enemas of what was essentially colored water, but they'd charge men for this treatment to pump them up, as it were. And were starting to do a brisk business when they had to flee town because all the checks they'd written were bad and they hadn't kept any of their deals. And they wound up back in the pokey there once they were extradited from Tennessee at one point for a period until they paid off their debts. And then Brinkley went on to bigger and, I don't know if we should say, better things.
Better for him financially for a time,
yeah,
at least.
He made an enormous amount of money, particularly because he harnessed radio. He was one of the first commercial broadcasters in the States, first in Kansas. And he would use the radio to hawk his homemade medicines, as it were, often little more than colored water. But with the huge broadcast range he had, he would sell not only his treatments that he'd given his hospitals, but these patent medicines across the country.
He is certainly a fascinating character. We're talking about the career of Dr. John Brinkley this hour on Speaking of Strange. And when we come back, let's get into some of his other enterprising attempts to promote himself. Fascinating character. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. This hour, very special guest, Mr. John Elliston in the house. And we're talking about Dr. John Brinkley. We could just call you Dr. John Elliston for the night.
Yeah, I've got about as much credentials as Dr. John Brinkley.
We're listening to Metal Flake Mother, by the way. Josh Warren, Dr. Joshua P. Warren. Sometimes gets on me about too much rock and roll trivia, but I just to illustrate for listeners that Dr. John Elliston and I are on the same wavelength. Man, I was loving these guys, Metal Flake Mother and Family Dollar Pharaohs. and a lot of these Chapel Hill musicians that you were down there in college when they were playing, right?
Yeah, yeah. We didn't know how good we had it.
Did you get to see Metal Flake Mother perform live?
Oh, yeah.
God, I only wish there was like a video. Somebody's got a video.
Some cool dudes. I'll bet we can find some.
Oh, yeah.
They were rock and roll, for sure.
Not least among those, Randy Ward, who I always like to invoke the name of Randy Ward because he was special, man. He was some kind of genius.
He really was.
I only saw him live on stage one time with Family Dollar Pharaohs, and it made that much of an impact. Now that 20-plus years later, I still consider myself a devoted fan.
Yeah, he's worth it.
Yeah, that Chapel Hill scene, early, mid-90s, great stuff. Speaking of other neglected recordings, to bring Dr. John Brinkley back into it, I've got a little something here that I think listeners may find interesting. In 1933, Dr. John Brinkley recorded a birthday greeting for his son, Johnny Boy. Let's go ahead and give that one a listen.
Johnny Boy. Johnny Boy. This is Daddy talking to you. Daddy is speaking to you on August the 23rd, 1933. And I'm sitting here in the offices of the Radio Victor Corporation in Chicago, making this record, because I believe that you would like to hear Daddy's voice after he is gone. You know, it's just a few days now until your birthday. September the 3rd, 1933 will soon be here. And I'm sure that you will expect, and not only expect, but that you will receive many toys and many cards and many remembrances from loving friends and relatives. Johnny Boy, Daddy is talking to you because I have longed to hear the voice of my own daddy, who passed away on the 14th of April, 1896, when I was just 10 years of age. Your daddy is now 48. As you no doubt know from family records, I was born on July 8, 1885, back in the mountains of western North Carolina, in the county of Jackson, just about 47 miles west of the present city of Asheville, North Carolina. When my father died, and when he was buried, I stood by his unfilled grave, because when he left, all I had was gone. Mama had died on April 23rd, 1891, when I was just a little more than 5 years of age. And I did not have any brothers or sisters. So when Daddy was gone, everything was gone. And as I stood by his unfilled grave, in my little heart of hearts, I resolved to be a doctor like Daddy was.
There you go. When your resolve is made at that age, 10 years old, I think that's great that we have a recording of him from that early, 1933. He was probably just hitting his stride.
Yeah, and you think about what a moment it was, both for him and for the nation. We're neck deep in the Depression, and Brinkley has positioned himself as a kind of rags-to-riches guy. And in fact, that's exactly what he was, and he took great pride in exhibiting his young son, Johnny Boy, and giving the finest things in life to Johnny Boy, the best toys, as you heard, and swimming pools and boats and hunting trips and worldwide travel. And you can hear the nostalgia in Brinkley's voice there, thinking back to his humble childhood. And you get a sense of the arc of his life, where he's suddenly able to provide everything opulent, even in these tough years for the country. And while, like you said earlier, the hellhounds are starting to nip at Brinkley's heels because he's running into legal troubles wherever he goes. So he's like a human whack-a-mole. He keeps moving to a new place where he can run his medical empire. At that point, he was still in the game. And you can hear the sense of kind of confidence and nostalgia and kind of populist, plain-spokenness that he brought to all of his broadcasts.
Homespun.
Yeah.
And people like that. I
yes,
mean, people
they did.
Felt like this is a man of the people. And
absolutely.
That's like they were saying the podcast that it was that this Robert Downey Jr. Script is based on was, I haven't heard that, but I'm going to look it up now. A replay on the Reply All podcast, an episode called Man of the People.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he was breaking the law as at every turn and didn't have a whole lot of regard for authority, the regular folks really liked Dr. John Brinkley.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for all the smack we're going to talk about him tonight, he brought some good things to a lot of people, chiefly through radio. Some of the breakout mountain music and early country music stars in this nation had their careers birthed on Brinkley's radio stations. He reached out to old mountain folk in Jackson County and got them on what was then the most powerful radio station in the world, which he owned just across the border in Mexico. And he gave a lot of airplay to the likes of the Carter family and one Hank Williams Sr., and arguably changed the landscape of American music while he was, on the one hand, selling fraudulent medical treatments via the airwaves. On the other hand, he was building up commercial musical radio and traditional music voices in a way that had never been done before.
And I think, in a sense, the radio phase of his career, at least on the grand scale that it was, XERA, with an alleged million watts of power. They said people in the village could just listen to it through the barbed wire. They
yep.
didn't even need a radio set. The signal was so strong they could pick it up through the fillings in their teeth. So you would listen to Dr. John Brinkley in Villa Acuña, Mexico, whether you liked it or not.
Absolutely. And you'd listen to it in Canada if you wanted to. You could listen to it throughout the Northern Hemisphere. The broadcast was so powerful.
That's amazing. But before XERA, that Mexican border station, back in Kansas, he made a pretty good attempt at getting into politics in a big way. He ran for governor of Kansas.
That's right. When Brinkley got in serious hot water for the first time on the medical front, when he was losing his medical license from the state of Kansas because he'd had so many allegations of malpractice and malfeasance, He tried to turn the tide on the authorities and said, I'll be governor of this state. He launched a pretty last-minute write-in candidacy in 1930 and kind of did a blitzkrieg around the state in his airplane and his truck and used the radio to pump up his message and pioneered, again, techniques that are still in use today on the mass media and political front. And he would have won the governorship of Kansas if a bunch of his votes hadn't have been tossed on technicalities. He was a write-in vote, and the rules were strict and said that John R. Brinkley had to be written in for his vote. Dr. Brinkley wouldn't do. The goat doctor wouldn't do. Any other way you'd say his name was tossed out. So he ultimately lost that race and made some additional runs later. And very late in his life, as he was coming to complete ruin and saw the writing on the wall, he pondered a presidential run as a way that might bail him out.
It would at least keep his face before the public for
yeah.
a little bit longer. Yeah, I've heard about that that Kansas governor write-in vote, that they were so determined to keep him out, and knowing that he could win this thing, that they even disqualified misspellings. Like if you spelled Brinkley with an L-Y instead of an L-E-Y, then they would toss out your vote. So very likely that he would have won the 1930 governor's election of Kansas. But he was appointed a admiral of the Kansas Navy.
Yeah, that's true, and I still can't fathom what that means.
I don't know what it is. Some sort of honorary title. But we'll talk a little more about Dr. John Brinkley, one of Western Carolina's most fascinating characters, when we come back. Speaking of strange. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, your host, talking with John Elliston about Dr. John Brinkley. Did you ever hear of Dr. John Brinkley, good listeners? He was quite a character, and as John Elliston mentioned, probably the most famous character from Western North Carolina the world over during the 1920s and 30s, because he had a hand in so many things, not just invigorating the wilted bough, as we mentioned earlier. That's crazy stuff, man, talking about train loads of goats coming into town and the men lining up at the depot to pick out their goat.
Yeah.
Picking out a frisky goat to have his parts grafted into your anatomy. Doesn't sound like a wise decision, man. A man must be pretty desperate to please the ladies to go the extra mile.
Can you imagine the conversations? I mean, it's hard to talk about now.
It is. In those days, it must have just been like the name Dr. John Brinkley just made people red in the face,
yeah.
I'm sure.
And hopeful in some cases.
Yeah. We came in on a tune out of Greenville, South Carolina, appropriately enough, called It's Been a Long Journey by Rudy Wyatt and the Roots. And here is a place where I get to do a little music trivia, yet I can rope it in. And there's the John Elliston connection. I don't know if you even know this John Elliston, but the Speaking of Strange synchronicity continues. Very shortly after you were in Asheville FM Studios, where I do a volunteer show called Riffin'. It's just a rock and roll show. It's very disposable. You people wouldn't care about
it. Oh, you should listen every Thursday morning.
Yeah. Anyway, we were in there talking rock and roll, and you said, hey, here, check these guys out. It was a band called A La La's. Allah,
yes.
As in the god Allah, hyphen laws. So it's kind of an interesting double entendre, mm-hmm. there, A La La's. And I was like, yeah, why not? We had just put the new album, the first album, on the shelf, and we gave it a spin. John Reed was actually there in the studio with us that day, and it was good. It was a good time we had. Good time was had by all. And mm-hmm. then the next week or two, we kept playing A La La's tracks off of that new album. At first, you know, initially at your suggestion. So I start doing research into my friend Micah Hank's father's garage band, and I find out that they record at Mark V Studios in Greenville, South Carolina in 1965, and Bucky Hanks and Jeff Phillips describe this crazy guy that was sleeping in the closet at Mark V Studios in Greenville named Rudy that would jump in and play tambourine when they were recording some demos down there in 1965. Rudy Wyatt, who we just heard with his band The Roots, 1965, did that tune, It's Been a Long Journey, and I was going through some writing credits on like the BMI catalog. The only cover song, the only cover of a Rudy Wyatt song was, guess who?
The A La La's.
A La La's. Yeah, that tune.
Speaking of strange.
Their cover is on that first A La La's album, and when A La La's came around to Asheville again, I plotted to bring Rudy Wyatt up from Greenville and met the band, and
how
it was
awesome.
Very heartfelt, and uh-huh. they introduced him, brought him up on stage when they played Long Journey, and so there you go. It's rock and roll trivia and synchronicity.
Small world.
So I can pass that off as strange just because it's a small world.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have recognized the significance of A La La's having played it had you not played the A La La's for me when you visited.
Nice how things work out.
Yeah, it's very fortuitous.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've got this book here that my old friend Guy Harwood gave me. Guy Harwood was an interesting fella. He'd be about 107 years old where he's still living, but he passed away in the late 90s. I used to visit him in the Vanderbilt Apartments next to Pack Library on Haywood Street there in Asheville. in the mid-90s, and he had a collection of the weirdest stuff. Fate magazine barely scratches the surface. Those Fate magazine back issues were like the most normal thing he had in his collection. But he had a lot of mimeographed stuff dating back from the 20s and 30s, really fringe, what I call gray literature, that is just totally under the radar, off the grid type madness, bizarre. Any sort of fringe subject you can imagine, this 85-year-old man had it in filing cabinets and dog-eared copies, you know, in this little apartment in the Vanderbilt Hotel next to Pack Library, circa 1995. And he gave me this copy of a book called Rhodes Courageous. It's a collection of talks given over radio station XERA during the fall and winter months of 1937 and 1938 by John R. Brinkley, M.D. And it's inscribed in the front to my friend Guy Harwood from John Brinkley, February 28th, 1940. So it's a rarity. It's a rare book and it's on its own, but to have an inscribed copy that was given to me by the man it's inscribed to is pretty special. The introduction to this book is worth hearing, or the dedication. This book is dedicated to rugged individualism, which characterized my environment and my upbringing in the tree-sheltered mountains of western North Carolina. Now let's bring another rabble-rouser, another troublemaker into it. When you flip to the back page of this book, you see that there's the paragraph done into a book by the Pelley Publishers in the fall of 1938, whose address is 1776 in the city of Asheville, North Carolina, in the United States of America. You've already described Dr. John Brinkley as a bit of a populist, which I think he was. What if you knew nothing more about this Pelley Publishers, the fact that they had box number 1776, do you think they might be flag wavers, might be kind of on the ultra-American, you know,
a certain bandwagon?
And right here in Asheville, North Carolina, well, yes, William Dudley Pelley, if Dr. John Brinkley was the most famous man in western North Carolina in the going into the 1930s, going out of the 1930s, it could have been William Dudley Pelley, even though he wasn't native. He had landed here in about 1932, and with an occult school. He was basically preaching mysticism and spiritualism and things like that, and within some months developed that into, the most openly pro-Hitler organization in America, the Silver Legion of America, the Silver Shirts. And it's interesting that even as late as 1938, that Dr. John Brinkley was willing to associate himself with a character like William Dudley Pelley. I've seen the figure $600 thrown around, which was a lot of money in those days, but I've heard that Dr. John Brinkley contributed $600 to the Pelley movement to have his book printed. And I don't know how many copies of these survive. Not many. There's one in the Pack Library, North Carolina room, and there's one right here in my hand.
It's a pretty amazing relic, and to see it signed by him and sent to someone in Asheville. And Brinkley had a soft spot in his heart for Asheville, so it's really something.
Why not I read one of these? I'm not gonna try my Dr. John impersonation. You got to hear Dr. John talking to Johnny Boy, Johnny Boy, last segment. But I'm going to read this fascinating tale. I mean, it kind of addresses immigrants, which coming from a populace, that's fascinating, to the Bohemians. A little Bohemian girl came to a big Texas city. She was raised on a farm in a community where school advantages were very, very poor, and consequently, her book learning was limited. The only job she could get was in a fish market where she received a few dollars a week. This girl was pretty, as many Bohemian girls are, and she had plenty of chances to be entertained by boyfriends, but she was wise and chose studying at a night school. I think I should read it in Dr. John's voice. I don't know if I can drag it out that long, though. she chose studying at a night school of dancing instead of dancing and drinking at a nightclub, and by the end of the first year, she had completed a stenographic course. The school secured a position for her with a plumbing firm where there wasn't much to do, but the salary was a little better than at the fish market, and the place was more promising. She was delighted and went to work with much enthusiasm. A few years later, that uneducated farmer's daughter was the chief stenographer with a firm of prominent attorneys. While working for the plumbers, she took a course in commercial law, which resulted in her getting this desirable position. She is now drawing a good salary as many American college graduates in the same city. She fitted herself for her tasks and laid the foundation for her own happy career under adverse circumstances. This is a true story, but it is not a great deal unlike many others that could be told of friendless and poorly educated bohemian girls who have fought their way in recent years in the same city. I think there's something especially commendable and worthy of mention in the characteristics of these people. Both the men and the women apply themselves with unusual energy and faithfulness to their tasks, and given an equal chance, they won't let any race on earth outstrip them. Dr. John Brinkley. We'll be right back after these messages. Speaking of strange. Welcome back to the final segment of Hour 2, Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, joined in the studio by John Elliston, who has been telling us an awful lot about Dr. John Brinkley, but less so about himself. What's John Elliston into these days? I mean, first, let's dive into that by way of the Dr. Brinkley article, because there are people who have been listening this hour that are really going to appreciate the opportunity to grab up something in print. So tell them where that is, and then I think you can talk about your connection to that publication.
Well, thank you. You know, Brinkley had such an incredible saga that began in Jackson County, this barefoot mountain boy who ultimately became multimillionaire and then flamed out harder than he could have ever expected, I believe. But tonight we're going down numerous tangents, and there are so many. First, I'd recommend a great biography of Brinkley that's called Charlatan. And I look forward to the upcoming major motion picture that's going to star Robert Downey Jr., as we mentioned, playing Dr. Brinkley. But in the meantime, before that movie comes along, I did a kind of concise history of Brinkley's rise and fall in the current issue of WNC Magazine, which you can find around the region, or you can go read the story for free at WNCMagazine.com. We've also got a photo gallery of some rare moments of Brinkley's life. And I hope you can check it out, because it's almost like a Wikipedia style, born and raised and how he came and went sort of account, where I tried to focus as much as is possible and is relevant on Brinkley's mountain roots and how he, in his way, came back to the mountains late in life. Once he accrued that incredible wealth, He came back and bought 9,000 acres of Jackson County, including some of what today are the most stellar protected vistas that region has to offer. He didn't have them long. He bought them late in life and went bankrupt shortly thereafter and died real quickly thereafter. But he was always so connected to his mountain roots and made it part of his mythology that somebody, anybody, could come up raised in a cabin and with hard work and good living and God's blessing and pious ways could make it big. He was sort of a prosperity preacher of his time in his way. And part of his way was to say, look, I made it big. And boy, did he show it. He was so ostentatious. Once he made all that money, he would drape himself in jewelry. He had 10 Cadillacs. He had his names on the hubcaps. He ultimately had 3 yachts and became kind of a renowned sport fisherman and truly could claim to be rags to riches. But he found his way back to rags and ultimately infamy.
And there are still a few monuments to Dr. John Brinkley's legacy in Western North Carolina, right? I think the name of the village where he was born was Beta.
Yeah, and very nearby, right next to the Tuckasegee River on State Road 107, and just off it, you can find these extraordinary, enduring marble monuments that Brinkley put up in the late 30s when he came back to buy property and buy a farm there. He built first a monument to his Aunt Sally, who raised him after his mother died at a very young age. He's also built an ornate tombstone monument for his mother. It's in Cullowhee proper, I believe, at a Baptist church there. I visited it. It's an enormous arched angel over a huge, by standards of a humble mountain cemetery. Headstone's not the right word. It's a true statue. And then back near East LaPorte, back next to the river, he also built new headstones for his father and his birth mother. I'm sorry, his Aunt Sally. In addition to the monument to Aunt Sally, he built a tombstone for her. At any rate, you can almost do a walking tour of all these monuments Brinkley built for his kin, and on every single one of them is emblazoned the words, Dr. John R. Brinkley. Here was a man who was at great pains to express his supposed medical credentials, and a man like perhaps some certain charismatic figures who like to slap his name on everything he did.
Yeah, I think there are certainly parallels in the personality of one Dr. John Brinkley and charismatic figures still in the world today, but luckily they're not going around stitching goat nuts into men's scrotums.
Not yet.
That hasn't happened yet.
Let's hope we don't get back there. But to get back to your question, I'm currently an editor at WNC Magazine, which covers 20-some counties of Western North Carolina. And my favorite part of what we do is in-depth history. And in the current issue, it's the ugly truth about Dr. John Brinkley and some of the lighter and more interesting moments of his life as well.
Glossy and well illustrated, and there might be an article coming up shortly that I worked on.
That's a little bit
of local rock and roll history.
Going to resurrect some history that Vance knows better than most.
WNC Magazine. John Elliston, thanks for hanging out with us in the studio tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's been great to talk to you.
This is Speaking of Strange, the Dark 30 Hour coming right up.